Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the D1 Baseball Podcast. I'm Aaron Fitt, alongside my good buddies, Kendall Rogers, and of course, Coach Mike Rooney. How are you, gentlemen, on the brink of a new year?
Happy New Year, boys.
Yes, as we record this, we're about 36 hours away from New Year's or something like that, and looking forward to seeing what 2021 holds for us in the college baseball world. But today we're going to take a look back a little bit on 2020 and say goodbye to this one.
It's got to be better than 2020, right? I hope.
I would think so. I would certainly think so, Kendall.
In our draft game, I would pick 2021 over 2020. I think it's got a better, more room for improvement.
Have y'all seen the commercial? Somebody brought it up to me the other day. I finally saw it. Have y'all seen the commercial where the girl's like dating the devil or something as 2020 or something like that? It's pretty funny. No. I'm trying to remember what brand it is, but it's like perfect for this year.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, this was quite a year. One good thing that came out of this year was a stronger relationship between D1 Baseball and the good folks at Driveline Baseball. Really enjoyed working with Driveline this year. And of course, for college coaches, making updates to your player development system can be a difficult task. And that's whether you're limited by time or money or resources. Driveline has put together solutions to help any and all as they try to move their programs forward. By calling or emailing into Driveline's customer support, coaches can work with the experts on creating a custom player development bundle that will stretch their budgets as far as possible. Through the combination of gear, technology, and software, Driveline will work together with coaches to draw out the perfect roadmap for player development in any program. So for more, of course, check out Driveline Baseball on Twitter, Instagram, or at drivelinebaseball.com. We had a lot of good feedback to our stock game last week, which was something we really enjoyed doing. But we'll get to part two in our stock game series later in the show. But first, you know, as we talked about, we're kind of taking a quick look back at 2020 before we plow ahead to 2021. Coach Rooney, you want to set us up for this first exercise of the show today?
Yeah, and Fitzy, let me comment quickly on two really sly things you've done in the first 32 seconds of the podcast here. First of all, that segue for, you know, 2020 and Driveline, that was an 80 segue. I don't want that to be lost. Like, that's serious hosting. Yeah, that was really good. Seriously. And then you said a lot of good feedback. I actually felt like we got a lot of bad feedback. We got a lot of feedback. We had over 1,000 votes on my Twitter poll. And, you know, certainly for Fit headquarters over there, 44% of the votes liked your team the best. At Team Rooney, Kendall was a solid showing, and my squad was I just think really got on the wrong side of PR, and maybe we just didn't have the right marketing team behind my selections, because I felt like America really did not recognize the greatness of my 8 selections.
And I will say this, I brazenly appealed to the good folks of Hail State Nation, and they came through for me. But I really thought, Runes, when the dust settled, that you had a chance, given the fan bases at Ole Miss, LSU, Arkansas, and South Carolina, all four teams that you drafted. I thought that was a strong group of fan bases, but they just didn't rally around you the way Hail State rallied around me. I have to assume it's Hail State. No offense to Kentucky, Florida, and Auburn, but I think Mississippi State's fan base is in a different stratosphere.
Well, so I offered Mississippi State fans a chance to host, and they apparently turned it down because they picked you.
Right. Kendall, that was a great play, and I begged on Twitter. Maybe it was just unbecoming. Maybe that was the problem.
Yeah, but Southerners don't like people begging.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I was groveling. So, but Fitzy, congrats, 44% of the vote. That was well done. We will play it out on the field, as they say. That was just a poll. So should we get into our year in review here, boys?
I think we should. Sure. Let's do it.
Okay, so we're going to do, before we do our next version of the stock picking game, we are going to do a little year in review. We're going to pick a player we're going to miss in college baseball. We are going to pick a player that we met in college baseball. And we are going to talk about a story or a team that really impacted us. So we'll kind of go around the horn here. Kendall, why don't you start us out? A player that from 2020 that you're going to miss that's moving on from college baseball.
I know this will be totally shocking to you guys, but I'm going to go with Ace Lacy. You know, I think if you look at the year that he had, one of his last starts that I saw in the spring was against New Mexico State. Not only did he carry a one hitter into the ninth inning, He made Nick Gonzalez, a first-round pick, look like a high school hitter. And that gave me an idea how good of a year he was going to have. It's kind of interesting. When I was talking to Rob Childress back in May, he said that, like, he was, like, sick thinking about the fact that they could not go through a full season with him as the Friday guy, because you're looking at a pitcher who might lose two or three games in that league max just because of just how good he is on the mound. And so to not be able to see that guy, not only if you're, let's say, Rob Childress, but not be able to see him if you're a scout or if you're guys like us for the whole season, we really missed out. You know, there's so many guys out there we missed out on the rest of the year. But he would have truly been special to watch. I'm going to have a backup guy here too. Nick Lofton at Baylor is a guy I really liked. I saw him at the Shriners College Classic. And you know, you talk about a guy that's an electric player in the box. He's got power. He was really good up the middle. He was going to be a very exciting player to watch too. And I wrote about Baylor for the fall report, and Baylor is going to be really good next year, I think. But, you know, losing Nick Lofton is certainly going to hurt him. So, for me, those two guys kind of stand out. I know that kind of sounds a little bit Lone Star State homerish, but there we have it.
If the shoe fits.
I know, right?
That's well played. I mean, if you didn't pick Asa Lacy, KR, we were going to have a big problem, a big, big problem.
He might have taken me in the bar fight or something.
Yeah, that was well done. And you know what's a shame? You alluded to it, KR, is like this dude was going to have a monster year. It was going to be in a year where the Friday night dudes in the SEC were just epic. Can you imagine some of those Donnybrooks that we are going to get to see, some of those pitching matchups? Goodness gracious.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, looking ahead to 2021, if you remember a few podcasts ago, you know, Aaron saw Connor Prelip this fall, and he kind of gave him a little bit Asa Lacy vibes, maybe even a little bit more upside. So if you're an SEC fan that was looking forward to seeing Asa in the spring, keep an eye on Connor Prelip in this upcoming spring.
But I'm like definitely – definitely with you on Asa, and just the neat thing, we've talked about this before in the pod, but just the strides that he made year over year, you know, each season. I mean, he was already a beast last year, you know, I mean, and he showed you flashes late in his freshman season, but then as a sophomore, you know, he was really good. Right. And then for Team USA and you know, all the looks that people got in the summer, but to come back this year and just take that extra step, you know, with the slider in particular, just being such an insanely good pitch. I mean, the one look I got at Asa in Frisco was really impressive. And I'm with you. Would have loved to have seen what he did in the course of a long season.
Yeah, and I'll add this about Lacy too. I think the most impressive, you know, even beyond the one hitter against New Mexico State, I think the most impressive just maybe one inning I've ever seen for him is kind of bizarre. He walks the bases loaded against Arkansas 2 years ago, and then he has to face Casey Martin, Heston Kjerstad, and Dominic Fletcher back-to-back-to-back with bases loaded, nobody out. And like, I think it was – might have been the seventh inning, and the dude turns around and strikes out the side to end the inning. So, like, that's like the one inning, you know, when he goes off to big league ball and he gets to the pros and he has success, that I always kind of look back at his college career and think of when I think of Asa Lacy.
That's outstanding. Fitzy, how about who are you going with?
This is, you know, it's really hard to pick just one, so I might cheat a little bit like Kendall did.
I like it.
Obviously, I'm not going to even include Bryce Jarvis because he's in a different category. You know, we've been over Bryce Jarvis many times. He was the man. That was one of those picks for me that I made last year that made me look good. And
he's on the all-fit Mount Rushmore, Bryce Jarvis.
I think he is. I think he is. He's up there with the Tony Kemps and the Nick Madrigals and those kind of guys. Even though he's not short, he's carved out a niche.
Your Bryce pick kind of balances out your Wake Forest pick annually.
No, well, in this case, Wake Forest didn't have a chance yet. They would have been very good this past year. You know, and I would say Nick Swinney was another one that I was very bullish on as a breakout guy who wound up clicking at NC State. But, you know, the guys that I wanted to mention, particularly for this exercise, Christian Chamberlain. You know, you talk about the all-fit prototype, right? The short guy with a mean streak. You know, the one look I got at him this past year, I was really curious to see what he would look like as a starter. Would he be able to maintain his stuff? You know, a smaller guy, a wiry kind of a build. And for five innings down in Starkville early in the season, he really did. I mean, it was he struck out 12 against a really good offensive club, at Mississippi State. And I mean, it's just, it was 93-94 with a vicious breaking ball and change up, and he just competed his tail off. And I love the way he stalks around the mound, the whole thing, you know, he's like if you could put Nick Madrigal on a pitcher's mound, you know, he's kind of got the same just the way he carries himself as a smaller player. I love it. I mean, come on, that's just catnip for me. That's the one I wanted to highlight most, but I'm bummed I'm not going to get to see Aaron Sabato as a junior.
So good. I mean,
he was going to hit a lot of very long home runs. And he was really just heating up that last week before the season started. He got kind of his first, a slow start the first 3 weeks. And then I think he went bonkers the last week, and then, they pulled the plug. So, that one is a shame. And then the last name I'll mention, sorry, I'm really cheating here, Runes, but
I like it.
Alec Burleson. I mean, that East Carolina. Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's a good one.
Talk about a guy that for 3 years was just a superstar performer as a two-way player, I was glad to see him improve his draft stock to the point that he did. I think that was well-earned. I mean, it's a pretty special bat, but boy, I mean, it's another guy that you put him on the mound, it might not be the sexiest stuff, but he competed so hard and he had just the natural fuel to pitch. You could put him in a stopper role or a starter role or however they needed him for those couple of years. And he delivered. So just an incredibly valuable player. In my opinion, he was the best two-way player of the country. And he definitely had a bar fight meter through the roof going for him as well.
Yes, he did. He had bar fight hair too, yeah. By the way.
That's extremely important.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Feel like Cliff Godwin's bar fight meter's through the roof too.
Yeah. He's looking to mix it up. Like, yeah, single and looking to mingle. Like, yeah, he's feisty. I like.
What about you, Runes?
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Torque. I'm going to go with Spencer Torkelson, obviously being an Arizona person, got mm-hmm. to see a lot of at bats of his, and just the way almost from day one of his freshman year, people pitched him so carefully. It was like watching surgery because they're being so careful with this kid. And then yet they make one mistake and it's see ya. Just the power was so incredible. The athleticism. I mean, really, he was just a special talent who carried himself well and really worked at the game, had an intelligent approach to the game. And when you have a power hitter like that, where there's always swing and miss, but it's not crazy swing and miss. It's really swing and miss because people are being so cautious with him. So Spencer Torkelson, I'll give you guys my backup name. Jordan Wogu of Michigan. We really got to know him during the run, and he's just such a neat story for college baseball. Really was more of a football player in high school and was a football athlete, football physicality. Really bright kid, was there on an academic scholarship, which if you're on an academic scholarship to Michigan, I mean, you're basically a brain surgeon. And really turned himself into a great player. I think that run Michigan made, we miss all those players, but Jordan Wogu, really, really a neat story for me. So good. Well done, boys. Those are good names. How about Kendall? Let's get you to a player you met this year, player that you put your eyes on for the first time in 2020 and you're excited about.
I think a guy for me, is Kel Imsmoff at Little Rock. I mean, he was a guy that Chris Curry was really excited about coming to the season. He was a kid that hit 214 and 270 his first two seasons. And what did he do in 2020? He had a 417 average, 7 home runs, had a 1.327 OPS. And, he was a guy, again, had the draft been a little longer, he would have probably gotten drafted. But as it stands, he got a free agency deal. So that would be a guy that is no longer around. That kind of jumped on the scene for me. I think the other one for me would be at Tulane, Braden Althoff. 47 right. Strikeouts, 3 walks in 2020, and guess what? Big Jew and company get him back for another year. So it's hard to jump on the scene better than 47 strikeouts and 3 walks.
No doubt. Yeah, those are good ones. Fitzy, who you going with on this one?
Well, the guy that I had the most fun with in the 4-week season might have been Cale Baker down at Ole Miss. I think when the season was canceled, I said one of the great tragedies of this season was that Cale Baker never got a chance to fully realize his destiny as an Ole Miss folk hero, because he was well on his way to that. It's just like a Sykes Orvis part 2, but larger than life personality, big old gut, and I think he's worked hard to put himself in better shape. But I mean, you're supposed to be the guy. You're like, this guy should be playing beer league softball. Like, what's he doing out there? But he's got bat speed. I mean, it plays, and he's got some feel to hit. And but he's just a fun loving personality. It just jumps out. And the first time I was down there for opening weekend against Louisville. And he had a big weekend. It's a bunch of clutch hits, and everybody wants to talk to him in the post game. huddle, and you know, he's just surrounded by media and he's just eating it up. I mean, he was not at all like scared of this stuff or out of his element. He felt like he was right in his element, you know, just a country boy who's out there having a good time. And it was awesome. He's a fun player, and I'm glad we get to watch him again this year.
We have a member of the Kel Baker fan club over here in the background with Fit.
Yeah, my dog is my dog's a little anxious for some inexplicable reason. I
like it. He's looking to talk college baseball, or she. All right, so I really focused on freshmen here, and so I got to go Bob Moore, one of my favorite all-time players, old Bobbert Moore. And I think the thing that bears remembering there is this kid was going to be a high school senior, and he comes in early to Arkansas. And so you remember Judd Fabian came in early and got his teeth kicked in at Florida. Bob Moore came in early to Arkansas and very quickly was a very, very good player. And I'm not being critical of Judd Fabian here. I'm just saying how hard this is. I mean, Judd Fabian, he comes in early. It's a rough freshman year. And next thing you know, he's a, what, top five pick, top 10 pick. And so now you start thinking about, Bob Moore. And I mean, we don't know where he's going to get picked, but God, this kid is a really, really good player. I do want to give a shout out to Chris Newell at Virginia, who jumped on the scene, and I played Little League and American Legion baseball with his uncle and his dad. So Chris Newell is a Malvern Prep fighting Friar like I am. So I was really excited. I had heard about him forever, but I was really excited to see him be a great player. So I'm going with those two freshmen, Bob Moore and Chris Newell.
You know, in Runes, I think the big thing with Bob Moore is that, you know, if you just look strictly at his numbers, a lot of people would go, okay, well, like the numbers don't like scream at you. But if you look at what he did defensively up the middle and you look at just like his presence in the box, it was really impressive. So I think when you look at Bob Moore, a lot of people would probably look at his numbers and go, hey, like, why are y'all so sky high on him? But it's very seldom you see a freshman be that mature in the box and just look that kind of composed and instinctual in the field as he did early in the season.
I love it. All right, so year in review, item three. Let's pick a story, a team, a theme, something that when you think back on 2020, you think about. So, KR, you kick us off.
I think the biggest thing for me is two teams here. And I look at Miami and Arizona State. I think when you look at the Hurricanes and the Sun Devils, and really, you know, much more so ASU, this was going to be a big year for two historic programs in college baseball. Miami is a top 10 team. ASU is top 10 quality. Miami hadn't been to Omaha since 16. ASU all the way back to 2010. And I think when you look at both these teams, certainly, I think even more so Miami, I think both of these teams had national championship caliber clubs. You know, you look at the, you know, Arizona State with that potent lineup. I think they had just enough pitching to go the distance. And I think when you look at Miami, they were kind of the total package. So I think for me, it was disappointing to not be able to see those two programs and specifically Arizona State go through the season, because, you know, if you're Tracy Smith and that staff, this was your year. And I think they're going to be okay. I don't think they're going to be great. I think they'll be okay in 2021. But this was the year that they were going to put Arizona State back on the map with Spencer Torkelson. And then, and kind of in the same vein that Rob Childress said about Asa Lacy, you could say the same thing about Spencer Torkelson. Like, sure, ASU has some really nice players. How often do you get a torque? Not very often. So just not being able to have him in such a critical year for those guys had to hurt. And I would say Miami, with just how good they were and could have even been the rest of the season, that had to hurt for Gino Demari as well.
Yeah. I think about Ben Greenspan at ASU, like how much work it takes to recruit players of that caliber that Arizona State, you know, in particular got their hands on, then get them through the draft, then develop those kids, and then you don't get to play it out. It that's heartbreaking. But, and you know, they're just, to your point, one example of being so. Fitzy, what are you going with? What are you going with?
And I think, Kendall, I think you said it well, you know, just to piggyback on what Kendall said, you know, when the season was canceled, my first thought was, I felt bad for the team. Well, not my first thought. One of my early thoughts was I felt bad for those teams that had really built for this year, you know, and I thought about the private schools, you know, the Dukes and the Wake Forests and the Tulanes, where they kind of, it's hard to do it at a private school. You kind of have a little window. And I thought, man, these teams might've missed their window. But, you know, I think the way things played out, I think Duke and Wake and Tulane all look like they're going to be right there again, you know, in the mix. I don't know about Arizona State and Miami is a private school that still has a lot of offensive talent. They actually have a lot of talent on the mound too, but they lost their entire rotation. And so I just feel like expectations for them have to be downgraded, considering I thought they were one of the two or three best teams in the country heading into last year. This year, I don't know that they're a top 25 team just because the pitching has to prove itself. So
what's amazing, Aaron, is I kind of feel like Duke is one of those programs that, you know, you kind of expect them to have a year where they're really going to have to reload a lot. But I kind of feel like Duke and Chris Pollard, they've kind of reached a point where I'm not going to say they're going to be top 10 every year, but there's not going to be some massive rebuild at any point. Like, they're recruiting to a level, they're at least going to be a top 20, top 25 caliber club every year.
It sure feels like it. It feels like they've figured out the formula, how to recruit to an elite academic institution with, you know, I mean, it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting spot because you don't have the fan base, you know, that a lot of rivals in those power conferences have. I mean, it's just the facilities. I mean, you're playing, okay, you've got a AAA parking, go play in, or you've got some little, you know, on-campus facility is what it is. I mean, it's just like some of the resources you look at and you think, oh, I mean, I don't know, but they figured it out. I mean, there's still a lot to sell there. You know, with just the university itself. And they figure out how to use the resources at their disposal there. And yeah, it really feels like they're rolling right now.
Let me ask you something real quick and we'll kind of move on. I don't mean to get off topic here, but like with Duke, you certainly know that staff really well. You know, kind of the ins and outs of Duke pretty well. Do they get a lot of like need-based help there at all?
I think they do get some. I'm not probably as educated on this as I would be. I could tell you my wife didn't get any for law school,
she just paid those off like a couple of years ago. Right. And she's been out of school for like 12 years or something.
Well, she got after paying them down, but it was, I mean, it's, you know, it's expensive. It's an expensive place to go to school. I do think that they do have plenty of academic aid. I think they have need-based aid too. I think they have a decent amount of it, but I don't know how much, you know, how much they have compared to other elite programs. As far as my big story to kind of follow this year, you know, everyone talks about the 5-round draft and how that resulted in a boom for college baseball. There's an incredible amount of talent. But the other thing that I'm really interested to see is what kind of effect the restructuring of minor league baseball has on college baseball over the long term. You know, if it's slashing all these affiliates now, if you're a 15th round senior type of a talent and there's no longer a New York Penn League spot for you to go play and see if it sticks and see if you can move on up, what happens to you? You know, are you going to be able to find a job in indie ball? Are you going to be able to find a job, you know, or just go sign with a club and work out an extended spring training and hope you can, you know, make a splash there? I mean, I don't know how it's going to work. So for college baseball, it does feel like, okay, Major League Baseball wants to funnel more players into college and use college as kind of the first step in the developmental process. But then what? You know, that's one thing I'm really curious about. I don't know if we really know what the consequences of this minor league restructuring are going to be in the long term. It feels like maybe it should be good for college baseball, but I mean, you know, what about the players? I mean, what about the players? The good college player, the 4-year guy, the Justin Turner. 4-year player, 7th-round pick. I mean, you know, okay, maybe that guy still gets a chance and gets, but he didn't blossom. It took him some years in pro ball to blossom. I mean, will those players still have the opportunity to figure it out? You know, we'll see. And maybe they don't. And maybe, you know, they just find some other avenue to develop. But that's something that I'm very interested to see how it all plays out.
I would say this, Fitzy, I'm with you. Like, this whole restructuring, shorter draft, you know, the college baseball fan in me was excited because it just feels like either way you slice it, we're going to have a more talented version of college baseball. But I also feel like there's a real responsibility for our sport with this. You know, MLB saying, hey, you know, college baseball, we are going to defer to you as part of this development process here. You know, I think that makes me even more impassioned for, okay, so are we really going to do this with 11.7 scholarships? Like, is that really the right thing? I feel convicted it's not. We need to improve that. You know, I think I'm not picking on Arkansas, but I think about all the Arkansas players over the last 20 years that have had to take out student loans to play college baseball. And now they put up a $27 million player dev center, right? Like that $27 million could wipe out that debt in 2 seconds. Now, again, that's not Arkansas's fault. The way our rules are set up, Arkansas is not allowed to take care of those kids' student debt, right? Like so I'm kind of getting off on a tangent, but my point is, we're going to really be a more important part of the development chain here. We need more coaches. We need more scholarship money. Like we need the way we've been duct taping it together isn't going to be sufficient enough. And so I'm with you, Fitzy. I think it's a great opportunity for college baseball, but I hope that we, you know, I know the coaches don't think this way, but administratively we got to up our game if we're going to continue to take advantage of that. So, that's a good one. Oh, go ahead.
I think you're spot on with that too, though, Runes. I mean, that's exactly right. And you know, maybe that means more of a involvement from MLB on the scholarship side, something that's been talked about for years, or maybe it's just a matter of, you know, the autonomy conferences just taking the bull by the horns and running away with it and saying, all right, we're just going to have more scholarships for baseball. I don't know how we get there, but I feel like we're going to get there. We're going to have more scholarships. This is the first time in a long time where I actually feel like we're on a path to making that happen. Like it's not just a pipe dream. I think we're going to have more scholarships in the next 5 to 8 years.
Yep. I'm with you. Yeah. There's a surge in our sport right now. There's no question. I'll kind of use that to piggyback from my pick. Is the new model really was an interesting part of 2020, the proposal to move the season back. That proposal's been out there for 20 years, but it's never had as much movement, discussion. It was a real, I mean this in a positive way, that discussion was a real disruptor this year in a good way. Like people just most often just ignored that proposal. Nobody ignored it this time. You really had to sink your teeth into it. And maybe 4 weeks is too extreme, but I thought what Eric Bakich and those guys did, we don't have any movement right now, but man, it was really impactful with the details with which it was laid out. I think it was a completely different look at it than we've ever had before. So I thought that was exciting. Now, again, nothing has happened yet, but I don't think that's indicative of the fact. It doesn't mean that it wasn't an idea that will impact us down the road.
Yeah, you know, I think overall in college baseball, I don't think coaches are necessarily like 100% against it in the past. I think the problem you run into is there hasn't been a lot of detail involved. And I think when you look at, you know, Eric Bakich, I think whether it was him at the podium talking about the third assistant, if you remember, with his athletic director in the room, or you look at a situation that he goes, hey, you know what? We just got Michigan in the College World Series. I'm going to take a lot more active role in trying to get some things done in college baseball. He kind of sees the moment a little bit there. All of a sudden, he has a lot more cachet. And then the second thing is just the amount of detail that went into it. I can tell you, I was kind of talking to him throughout the whole process before they released it over to us. And like the guy was spending hours and hours kind of going through this with coaches from all over the country. And it's not a shock that if you actually put a lot of thought into something and give reasons why this should happen, or, hey, here are some negatives, but here is why I don't necessarily think this should be, a non-starter, and this is why, then all of a sudden I think coaches take you a lot more seriously. And all of a sudden you've got some coaches in the Southeastern Conference and the ACC going, you know what? Like, I actually think this makes a lot of sense. And so I don't think we're going to get this trial run this year that some people were hoping for. I just don't think the NCAA wants to move the College World Series back. But you never know. I mean, we still have another month and a half to change our minds.
So definitely a foundation. If something happens down the road, like, this was the foundational moment, right? Like,
absolutely.
This was the crux of it.
But it felt to me like – This was the opportunity to actually make it happen. And, you know, if it was going to happen, I kind of felt like they would use 2020 and the pandemic as a reason to push it back and then see if it sticks. I feel like the fact that it doesn't look like that's going to happen suggests to me that this is never actually going to happen. I mean, maybe, we'll see.
No, you make a good point, but I will add this is if you look at this model, it did say, you know, in the month of June and even in the July a little bit, there would be an extra cost involved. And, you know, what's the two words that ADs are saying right now? Cost containment. And so they're not going to do anything this year that's going to add cost to, you know, to the ledger. And I think that's the main reason why they won't consider this at all.
I also think, as it's reflective of, we don't really have a great setup in our sport right now for enacting change. You know, I think everyone likes the idea of the new model, but here's the concern. If you move this season back, all you're going to do is shorten the season. You know, I think a lot of coaches' big fear is if we move it back 2 to 4 weeks, the ADs are going to capitalize and say, that's great, but you're just going to play less games from now on. And so until there's some mechanism where you can have a productive back and forth between the two parties, I think it is going to be, not having that vehicle or that way to have a conversation like that is a real problem in our sport right now.
Well, not only that, and I would urge coaches, I know there's plenty of coaches listening to this, but I would urge coaches to get involved. I mean, there's so many times, you know, where this third assistant where, you know, I would talk to a coach or, you know, I would talk to the guys at the ABCA and they're like, hey, I just talked to coaches in this league, this league and that league. And like, they haven't even talked to their ADs or asking me to call their ADs. And I would urge all coaches to get involved because, you know, at the end of the day, if it's not something that your coach is worth fighting for to your face as an administrator, like why in the hell will they pass it? So I would just urge coaches moving forward. If it's something you're passionate about, get involved, because if you don't get involved, then they're not going to take you seriously.
I think that's a fair point. So, hey, let's move on to our draft, gentlemen. Let's start. Let's play the feud, as they say. That's good. That was a good remembrance of 2020 right there. So we're going to do the ACC first.
Okay.
And then we are going to do the Big 12, and then we'll just do a random team. All right. So ACC, and I have the first pick because I did so poorly in the voting on the internet. So, all right, who do I want here first? I am going to take I'm taking the Virginia Cavaliers. That's who I'm going to take. Is that your pick, KR?
Yeah, this is like the most obvious pick, though.
I don't know.
This league is rich with good picks. I think the ACC is going to get turned inside out in 2021. Like I think there's going to be – it's going to be a fiercely contested league. I think it's going to be fascinating. But give me the Hoos.
Yeah, that's certainly a good pick. It's a team that I think I might have had in my 8 for Omaha back in June. I mean, it's certainly, if not, they were right outside it. But I think I had them in. I mean, we're talking about a team that went 14-16 2 years ago. So Roone's banking that Virginia will improve upon a 467 winning percentage in the ACC is essentially the play here. And yeah, I mean, I think they get to, you know, if it's a 30-game ACC season, which, Kendall, what's the number? It's more than that, but if the equivalent of a 30-game season, I mean, I think you could expect Virginia to get to, 18-12, I think is a pretty solid bet and maybe better than that if the pitching holds up.
Yeah, I like it. Hey, Kendall, you are in the two hold this time. And then Fitzy, you're 3 and 4. So KR, who do you like here?
Do we need to, by the way, backtrack? Do we need to explain the rules of the game again, just in case anyone missed the last podcast?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Fitzy. Thank you for that. Yeah. So basically, this is we're not picking who are the best teams in the league. We're picking we're going to take conference wins 2019 versus 2021. So think of it; it's a stock picking game. We're trying to pick value. Who are the teams that are going to make the largest improvements in the number of conference wins, and we will normalize for a 30-game season so that, you know, because obviously the conference seasons are probably going to be a little bit different in 2021 compared to 2019. So that's what we're looking for movers. We're looking for value stocks. We want to buy low and sell high here. So that's why we're picking Virginia. So there you go. KR, what do you got?
I think I'm going to go with Boston College here. You know, this is a team that finished 12-18 2 years ago. I was talking to Mike Gambino the other day. He's really excited about this club. And he's one of those coaches that, like, I feel like if he thinks his team's going to stink, he'll tell you. If he thinks his team's going to be really good, he'll tell you. And he thinks his team's going to be really good. I think you look at the front of that rotation, Mason Pelio. Obviously, the weekend rotation, you know, is going to have to be more consistent. You got Alex Stiegler coming in from Yale, a graduate transfer. And the thing I like about this team is they've got some nice pieces on the mound. But you're talking about an offensive lineman, offensive lineup, that has three graduate players. You obviously got Sal Frelick in the center field. And so they've got nice, experienced, productive pieces, both, you know, offensively and on the mound. And I didn't even mention another senior in Joe Walsh in the back end, you know, a lefty they really like. So I think Boston College, you know, I'm not sure that they're going to win 18 or 19, but I could easily see these guys winning 16 or 17 in that league this year.
Yeah,
good
that
selection
was
right there.
That was going to be one of the teams I certainly would have taken here at the turn. I think they're going to be a lot better. There's no question they're going to be better than 12 and 18. I mean, you know, Sal Frelick is special, and you know how I feel about Cody Morissette and you know, the veteran guys, Jack Cunningham's, all those. But the key to me for BC is Emmett Sheehan. I think, you know, you've got Pelio. I'm all in on Mason Pelio having a huge year. Emmett Sheehan has a big arm, and you know, he just hadn't done it yet with the command piece. He had an 8 ERA in the shortened season last year. But I mean, it's, you know, you look at him, it's long and lean. The arm works. I think he was up to 98 at times. He's got some feel for the secondary stuff. It's just got to click. And if it does, that could be a very exciting 1-2 punch, but that's one of the biggest X factors in the entire ACC is Emmett Sheehan, because they just need that second guy that, you know, I think Stiegler's certainly going to help a lot. That was a really nice get for them, but I think Sheehan is that's the biggest key for me for BC.
I like it. Fitzy, two from you.
Yeah, this is fun. So, I think Virginia Tech is an easy one for me here at a team that went 9-21 2 years ago. I liked their team heading into this past year in 2020. I thought they were going to be considerably improved. Even though you take away Ian Seymour, I still really like the top of the rotation with Chris Girard and Anthony Simonelli. I actually like their depth and their balance. I mean, I like some of the lineup pieces, Nick Bittison and Kevin Madden, and you know, Brennan Reback, a little speedster out there. I mean, I just think they've done a really good job building this thing. And I feel like this is the year for them to make a run. This coaching staff now has been there long enough. They've got all their own guys in there. And I just think the talent level has clearly improved year after year. You know, I think they could be a 500 team in the league. And if so, that's going to provide me big value. I mean, a team that went 9-21 2 years ago, going from a 300 winning percentage to a 500 winning percentage would be a big win for Team Fit. So I'm going to take the Hokies, my first pick here at the turn. And with my second pick, I mean, I think this is a no-brainer. I got to take the Deeks. Of course I got to take the Deeks. What else am I going to take?
Deke Fever, let's go. Deke Fever.
Come on. This is money in the bank. 14-16 2 years ago, and they're going to be in Omaha this year. So, I mean, I feel like I'm stealing from you guys with this pick. this team is loaded. They're loaded. I mean, you know, you think last year, oh shoot, you know, season's canceled. They're going to miss their window. They're going to lose Bobby Seymour and they're going to lose Chris Lanzilli. No, both those guys wind up coming back. You know, and you've got Ryan Cusick, an emerging first round talent at the top of your rotation. You got Tony Menendez, the slot shifter, and Will Fleming. I mean, that's got a chance to be a really good rotation with some big arms in that freshman class coming in, providing some depth. Pitching has typically been their bugaboo, but this staff has real weapons, and they're going to hit. They always hit, and this lineup is loaded. So the Deeks at 14-16, I say they win 18-20 ACC games or the equivalent thereof in 2021.
Ooh, that's a very good pick, Fitzy. I like that. I like the conviction of that pick as much as anything, as Kendall shakes his head. I'm going to go – give me the Pitt Panthers. I you know, of course, they were 8-22, so I've got a lot of room to play with there. They're going to be old. They did a nice job on the waiver wire. I really like what kind of Mike Bell is instilling in that program. I just think there's not going to be much of a bottom to this league. And so I think, you know, Billy Corcoran, one of their pitchers, is a Malvern Prep kid, so let's stay with the Fighting Friars. So let's go, give me the Pitt Panthers, 8-22. I'm thinking I'm getting at least 12 or 13 wins out of them.
This is good. Smart value play right there, Runes.
Yeah. Let's stay in Pennsylvania. It's the wrong side of Pennsylvania, but we'll do it.
I will say this though.
Did I go over KR, by the way? Did I just trump?
that's what I was going to say.
Sorry about that, KR.
Hate to burst your bubble, but you went out of order. So I'm putting Pitt back on the board, Kendall. It's your pick.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, it's a violation. You're muted, Kendall.
I will give Runes Pitt because I wasn't going to pick Pitt. I'm going to go with the
– I batted out of order. Look at that.
See, you bat out of order and it doesn't really matter. I'm going to go with the fighting Mike Rooney's, the fighting Irish Notre Dame. Yeah, you know, people kind of forget that they were off to a terrific start. I mean, they roughed up North Carolina right before the season ended last year. And I think in year two at Lee Jarrett, when you look at their pitching staff with, you know, John Michael Bertrand, Christian Scafidi coming over for Penn, just a really accomplished pitcher. They get Cam Brown, another quality arm back from an injury. And then, oh, by the way, you throw in Joe Sheridan, who's also a very productive arm down at UCF. You know, I really, really like their pieces on the front of the week in rotation. I think offensively, it all starts with my man Nico Cavadas. When you talk about bar fight meters, like he's off the charts. Like he's running the show at the bars in South Bend. He's in the middle of that. He's the staple. Yeah, I mean, he's a staple in that middle of that lineup. And I think Notre Dame, if you look back at 2 years ago, they finished 13-17. You know, I don't think they're going to be like Wake Forest, for instance. But I think they could very easily win, you know, 16, potentially 17 games in that league.
I like that very much. The only thing I didn't love about Notre Dame was what you just said, KR, is that they had 13 wins. Like that was, you know, that's solid, you know, like in a league like that. So, but I do, I mean, if, you know, we talked about it last time, when you just don't think about seasons, think about program trajectory. Gosh, give me all Notre Dame. Like, love their direction right now.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like if they took that big of a step forward in year one, I mean, they won seven straight games for the season ended. If they took that big of a step forward in year one under Lee Jarrett, it's like, what can they do in year two? And maybe it's fool's gold, but I don't think it is.
Just the question in this league is, it's just like the SEC. Like, who is
like
gonna
who's going to stink, right? Yeah, like who's going to lose?
Somebody's going to lose these games. So, all right. So I got the Pitt Panthers. Thankfully, I got lucky on that one. Give me, man, this is a tough one. Give me Clemson. I don't have a concrete reason. I believe in Monty Lee. I believe in the bones of this program. This is a great college baseball program. There's talent on this roster. 15-15, being better than that is no small feat in this league. But I got a feeling on the Clemson Tigers. Give me the orange team.
And they strike me as a team that probably that's about where they fit. I feel like they fit as kind of that 500 in the league again. So in my opinion, you know, at this point in the draft, as we get to the third round of this thing, maybe that's what you're looking for is just hold your ground.
That's so KR, you're up again. By the way, you've only picked Catholic school so far, KR. So just, you know, just.
I'm trying to please you, Runes.
Thank you.
This is tough, man. I have no idea who to pick here. I'm not like ultra bullish on Florida State, and Florida State went 17-13 a couple years ago. I guess I'll go with NC State. I think when you read Aaron's fall report and kind of look at the pieces they have, Jose Torres had a great summer. Even though they went 18-12 2 years ago, I mean, I could see you know, NC State being one of those teams based on the fall report that could win potentially 19-20 games in that league. So, I mean, at this point, like Aaron said, I mean, like these teams are pretty close to where they're probably going to be this year. I would say NC State has room to increase a couple of games, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe I'm a little bullish on them, but I like their club on paper.
No, I agree with you. I think they're that's a decent bet to at least get back to 18-12. And yeah. I could see him reaching that kind of 20-10 range. I believe that they are a top 10-15 kind of a team, maybe more in the top 15.
Yeah,
a little bit more proof on the mound, but I mean, the pieces are there. I mean, they're going to hit a lot and yeah, good pick. Good pick here. I'm actually pretty surprised that Duke gets back to me with the last pick in the third round. I mean, 15-15 2 years ago. Of course, I wound up winning a super regional after taking a regional as a three seed on the road at an SEC school, but and pushed Vanderbilt to the brink in supers. But a lot back for this team, even though they obviously lost, you know, Jarvis at the top of the rotation. I think between Cooper Stinson and Henry Williams, you've got a chance for a pretty good 1-2 punch there. You get Michael Rothenberg back, maybe unexpectedly as a, you know, switch hitting power hitting catcher. That's a guy that you wouldn't normally get back if you're Duke. And I think that makes a big difference. But Chris Pollard thinks this might be his best team yet. And it's another guy that I feel like he typically has a pretty good sense for what he's got in his hands. And he likes this club. And I do think they're deeper, on the mound than they have been. So a lot to like there for Duke. I do think they can get back to 15-15. I feel pretty good about that bet. And then it gets, I think, very interesting.
Yes, this is tricky now.
Martha's blowing up.
Let's go, Martha. Compete. No days off for Martha.
Okay. I am between two teams here. Do I shoot the moon? You know what? I'm gonna take the more conservative pick here. I'm gonna go with Florida State. Florida State went 17-13 2 years ago, and for me, they kind of fit right in there with NC State, that kind of 10-15 range. I mean, they actually have more power arms than they've probably ever had in the history of that program. I mean, it's not typically a power pitching kind of a program. That's not how they've been built over the years. They've been built with, finesse strike throwing guys and patient power hitting lineups. And they still have a lot of those things. I mean, again, it's a team that gets back Reese Albert and Elijah Cabell and, these guys that would normally go out and sign. You get Robbie Martin as an emerging star. I mean, I think they're going to score a lot of runs, Matthew Nelson behind the plate. I thought he looked great in the fall as well. But then you just look at some of the pitching that they've got, the young arms. I mean, those guys need to hit the ground running, the Carson Montgomerys of the world. They really are excited about the Messer kid, who I think could be a legit Friday guy. I'm buying what I'm hearing from Jimmy Bellinger and Mike Martin Jr. about the pitching staff there. I think they're going to be very good. So I do think they can get back to 17 wins or maybe even improve upon it.
I like it. KR, I'm not going to bat out of order this time. Who do you got?
Well, so they won 9 games 2 years ago. I'm going to go with Virginia Tech here.
Already off the board.
Oh, man. Oh. This is brutal.
Did I make that mistake? I even wrote the team names down, and I didn't pick them.
It's only a 12-team draft, and Kendall manages to pick somebody who's already been picked. Come on!
That is a tried and true fantasy football.
I think that's even worse than going out of order.
I even wrote down a team, so obviously I wrote down the wrong team somewhere.
So VTech is off the board.
That was my first round pick. You think you're going to steal the round four? Get out of here.
Kendall, was that a veiled shot at Fitzy's first round pick?
It really wasn't. I have every pick written down over here except for Virginia Tech.
That is great. I like
that
so much.
Dude, we're pretty slim pickings right now, boys. I don't like North Carolina's chances to even be 17-13. I don't know. I guess I'll just go with Louisville to win more than 21 games.
I like it.
I think when you look at the emergence of Levi Usher and Glenn Albanese on the mound, and I mean, they're a much safer bet to win more than 21 games than I think North Carolina is to win more than 17, or Georgia Tech to win more than 19, or Miami win more than 18.
I absolutely agree. And actually, that was the team that I was weighing picking instead of Florida State, because I do think – I mean, Louisville, I think, is a top-5 team in the preseason. I think they're the favorite in the ACC. I definitely think they could, and even if they only win 20 games, I mean, you're only losing one. You're at this point in the draft, you're just trying to come close to holding your ground. But I mean, I think they could, they're good enough to go 22-8. I mean, they could conceivably improve upon 21-9, which is not easy. It's not a value pick, but they're going to be really good.
I still love you, Hokies fans. I was trying to pick you twice. So.
That's right.
We like them so much, we're going to pick them twice. I still don't know how the hell I did that. Like, I literally have every team written down.
It was except
Virginia Tech.
It was beautiful.
You were just so excited. You were just so excited about your anticipation of the Wake Forest pick that you just kind of blacked out Virginia Tech.
Yeah, when you pick Wake Forest, I was just kind of like, it was like having an epiphany over here.
Oh, that's great. All right, so I'm going Georgia Tech, and I don't think they're going to win more than 19 games, but I do. Very similar to my Clemson pick. I just love the vibe around that program right now. I feel like they are improving. I feel like the fact that they lost a home regional in 2019 is a chip that they will drag forward, and that will help them. Kevin Parada is one of my favorite incoming freshmen into college baseball. It will be hard for them to win 19 or more games, but I don't see them winning less than 18 games or 17 games. I think they're going to be very competitive. I like this team very, very much. So, yeah, give me Georgia Tech to hold serve and maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's the right pick at this point in the draft. I think you can expect some regression, in my opinion, for Miami and North Carolina from where they were 2 years ago. I think Georgia Tech will probably regress a little bit too from 19-11. But like you said, I mean, you're trying to stop the bleeding, as it were, at this point in the draft. Before we move on to the next section, Parker Messick was I got him confused in my mind with Jimmy Messer, but Parker Messick is the guy that Florida State, I think, is going to be going to have a really big year. He was a bullpen guy last year. I think they think he's going to be a Friday guy and a legit big time Friday guy. So keep an eye on that one.
Yes. Love it. All right. So we're moving to the Big 12. There'll be three selections in this league. And I have the first pick because we're going around the horn here, and I'm not going to,
Wait, hold on a second. Didn't Fit have the first pick in the SEC?
I did.
So you had the first pick for the ACC. Runes.
Well. So here's the thing, though, is we just for the SEC, and then the part two of that exercise was the non-power five. We just stuck with the same draft order. So I think we should stick with the same draft order today.
There.
Yeah, and then for the part three podcast, kind of where we do the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, you can have the first pick, and then we'll go with that order. How's that?
I guess.
There you go. Well. That you'll get nothing and like it, I think is what he said. But so that means, Kendall, that I'm taking your Texas Longhorns because that's the no-brainer of all. That is the Trevor Lawrence of this
episode. That was like the no-brainer of all no-brainers.
No question. They went 7-16 in 2019, finished dead last. Shocking. And we know they are not going to do that this year. So, yeah, I don't want to belabor the point. Give me the Horns. They're that's a good club.
I'll tell you what, boys, I mean, there are some awesome draft options here early on in the Big 12. I mean, I think Kansas State's a great, great option, but I'm going to go with TCU. 2 years ago, TCU finished 11-13, 34-28 overall. If you remember, that was that very controversial pick into the postseason where they went to Fayetteville. But I think when you look at the Frogs, they've got a lot of veteran experience offensively. They get back Gray Rogers, Gene Wood, Hunter Wolf is back. Tommy Sacco is a really nice shortstop up the middle. And then when you look at their pitching staff, they've got everybody back. Austin Krobe is a kid that they think could kind of turn into the next kind of Nick Lodolo type of arm, a first-round quality arm. Johnny Ray had a big fall. Russell Smith's back and healthy. Marcelo Perez is back with that fastball and slider. I think TCU has a legit shot to win this league. I would pick Texas Tech today. But I think TCU is going to win a lot of games in this conference. And, of course, they won 11 that year. They're going to win a lot more than 11 this year.
That's a great pick. I like it. Fitzy, two for you.
Yeah.
This is a good lead to have two straight picks, by the way.
Yeah, it Agreed. Is. I'm in a good spot here. Obviously, Kansas State is the easy pick, I think. A team that was 8-16 2 years ago. And you look at, they're built to win right now. I mean, and of course, Jordan Wicks, we've talked about plenty, the left-hander who could be a first round pick this year at the top of the rotation. But, they also really like Connor McCullough, power arm guy. And of course, Carson Seymour at the back end. I remember talking to Pete Hughes earlier this fall and the name Wesley Moore, a transfer from Cal State Northridge, he came up, he added 30 pounds and started running his fastball to 93 miles an hour. I think they've got arms and it sounds like Coach Hughes likes his lineup as well. I think they're going to hit enough. I certainly think they're going to pitch. So Kansas State for me is an easy one. For my second pick, that is not as easy.
No.
Again, there's a lot of different directions you could go in here. I don't know what to make of Oklahoma. They lost some important pieces. I know you kind of still like them, but that's the other team here that was below 500.
Yeah, I don't think you should pick Oklahoma, Fit.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not decided yet. I'm talking my way through it.
Says don't pick Oklahoma.
No, actually, I think the team that I like is West Virginia. I'm going to go West
Thank
Virginia.
Thank you.
Here. Like it.
13-11 2 years ago. I've got them. I walked away from Morgantown this fall thinking that they're a top 25 caliber club. Now, there's going to be about 60 top 25 caliber clubs when we sit down to actually do the rankings, but I like their team a lot. Again, lots of power arms. I think the lineup is versatile with some speed and some pop, and enough defense. I mean, I think I think they're going to win. I think they're going to win this year. So can they improve upon 13-11 in the Big 12? Yeah, I think they can.
I like it. So KR, I think we know who you're picking.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Oklahoma. You know, I think a lot of people are going to look at the fact they lost Prater, Cavalli, and Dane Acker. I think this is still going to be a really good rotation. You know, Dalton Fowler is a junior college transfer out of Mississippi who had a strong fall up to 93 with his fastball. Luke Taggart comes over as a grad transfer, a very accomplished, grad transfer from Incarnate Word. You know, Wyatt Olds, you know, we talk about the bar fight meter. He was up to 95. He wants to fight everybody. I love that guy as a potential weekend starter. Then you start to look at some of these other options like Ben Abram, Jake Bennett. Both guys have certainly arrived in Norman with a lot of acclaim. Christian Roback, Jared Goodman, Jason Ruffcorn. There are a lot of options here, and I trust Skip Johnson to kind of find the right roles for all these talented arms. But then when you look at Oklahoma offensively, Oklahoma early last year when they played really well at the Shriners Classic, they started to kind of finally have an identity from an offensive standpoint, and guess what? They return almost all those guys. Brandon Zaragoza has always kind of been known for his defense. He's kind of finally started to form into a pretty solid hitter. You know, Peyton Graham is going to be the guy for me to watch over at the hot corner. He was very impressive early last year, probably one of the top 10 potential draft picks for the 2022 draft. I think Oklahoma is actually going to have a lot more balance than people think. I think the Sooners certainly will finish better than 500 by a few games in that league.
Yeah, that's a good get. In Skip Johnson, we trust. That guy wins baseball games, period.
Well, I kind of like equate Skip to like Rob Childers in pitching. Like even if you look at like A&M or Oklahoma and you're like, oh, they lost this guy or that guy, like I kind of feel like they're just going to plug and chug. There's that phrase again. They're just going to plug and chug their pitching staff. So in Skip Johnson, we trust.
That's right. They're good. They good. That's a good staff. Yeah. And good pick. So yeah, now it gets dicey. All right. So I'm going to go give me Texas Tech. I mean, you know, like 16-8 is a high bar to clear, but it's not like they were 20-4 or something like that. And if anybody's got the talent to go on a big run, it's the Red Raiders. I do think 18, 19 wins will be hard to come by in that league, but give me the Red Raiders and then give me Oklahoma State. You know, it's going to be a very, very old team. They were 14-9. That's probably where they're going to end up again, I think. But I like Oklahoma State. They've got some serious depth. They've got some serious experience there. I'm going Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. So we're back to you, KR.
Yeah, you know what? I honestly, before I talked to Steve Rodriguez and I was kind of looking at Baylor on paper, I wasn't ultra sold on him, but as I talked to him, I started convincing myself that I think Baylor's actually going to be really good, and I think this bodes well for this conference. I think this conference is going to be literally like eight teams deep, and even Kansas with Everett, I think, what's his last name?
Hazelwood.
Yeah. I mean, I even think with him on the front end, Kansas is kind of intriguing. But I think when you look at Baylor, Evan Godwin was off to a nice start. Will Rigney was a young arm last year. They were pretty high on. He had some things cleaned up in the offseason, injury-wise. He was back this fall and really solid. Hayden Kettler is a guy that Aaron saw in Frisco a couple of years ago. He's a talented arm, and Blake Helton took a big step forward for those guys in the fall. And then you look on the back end, always important bullpen guys, Logan Freeman, Luke Boyd, both back. And oh, by the way, Baylor gets back offensively. Jared McKenzie, the freshman phenom from last year, Davion Downey, and also Andy Thomas as the catcher there, the seasoned backstop. I think Baylor's going to be pretty good. The problem with this league is there's not a team in this league that I think is going to be terrible. So kind of like the recurring theme of these other conferences, the Big 12 is going to be really good.
Loaded. Yeah, loaded. And obviously my pick here is Kansas. You guys did not leave me a choice here. And I felt like Kansas and Baylor were going to be probably the last two picks in this draft. But you know what? Studying up a little bit here, I feel pretty good about this Kansas pick. I think
they're solid.
Yeah, they were 12-12 2 years ago. And it's not you know, it's not easy to finish above 500 in the Big 12. There's only nine teams, but you bring back some firepower on the mound. You know, the top three arms are back. You mentioned Hazelwood, who's a, you know, breakout prospect, up to 95 miles an hour. Ryan Sear, who's been there for a long time and won a lot of games, and, you know, he's got good stuff. 1993, you know, former Mississippi State Bulldog, so he's been around the block a little bit. Eli Davis, another guy. This is the key for Kansas is, you know, Sear and Davis coming off injuries. You know, can they stay completely healthy? They need them too. But, you know, Jonah Ulani at the back, I mean, 1995 guy, you know, with spin rate and hitting really good numbers. So I think they've got enough on the mound. They really like their newcomer group. I'm really excited about Maui Ahuna, the freshman. You know, that Rich Price Hawaii recruiting connection that goes back quite a long way. He always gets
sure. Oh, man. Remember old Ryotaro Hawakawa back in the day?
Good pull, KR. Good pull.
That's a good pull.
They've got a long history of finding gems out there. I don't know how they do it, but it's awesome. Maui Ahuna is probably going to be the starting shortstop as a freshman. He was the Hawaii High School Player of the Year last year. Great defender. And they think he's a big prospect. So look for him to step right in. And then a switch hitting freshman named Tavian Hosenberger. I think it's Hosenberger. Maybe it's Josenberger.
All name teams.
Wow. That was like a KR kind of thing to say right there.
It's a tough one.
Josenberger.
I'm going to go Josenberger.
High level of difficulty right there.
Hey, like I said, I'm going to shoot the moon in this podcast. I'm reaching for the stars. What's the toughest name I can find? But I mean, he sounds like a toolsy guy with kind of a leadoff profile that could make a difference. So, Kansas is interesting. There you go. Keep an eye on the Jayhawks.
I kind of want to be on a recruiting visit at some point with one of these Hawaiians who goes to Kansas on a recruiting visit.
Yeah.
Well, they're clearly going to a basketball game because that must be. Yes. I've never been to a basketball game there, but I bet it sounds epic. So, Fitzy, so you because we're doing the snake draft, you have the next pick. And you have the whole country, group or non-Power 5 teams. Who are you going with?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so we're wrapping up this exercise by taking one kind of bonus non-Power 5
team. And we'll probably have to do some bonus teams when we do the Pac-12 and the Big 10. So don't share all your cards this time, KR.
I think I shared all my cards last time, but I'm going to go with Middle Tennessee State. This is just a vote of confidence in Jim Thoman is what this is.
I like it.
A lot of new faces, you know, I'm not familiar with a lot of these new guys. I mean, you know, they're just names to me right now, but I believe that Coach Thoman knows what he's doing when it comes to bringing in, you know, the JUCO Bandits and everything else. They were 11-19 in Conference USA 2 years ago. And I think, I'm buying them to do better than that.
I like it. KR, what are you thinking here?
Oof. This is tough, but I mean, in Eric Valenzuela, we trust, right? Like, I've got to go with Long Beach State at 8-16.
Long gone. Taken. Kendall, for God's sakes.
They were taken last time.
Wait, no. Well, no, if we're going back to last time, somebody picked Middle Tennessee too.
No, nobody did. I they were one of the teams that I mentioned as a
honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
Y'all are killing me here.
I'll share Kendall the Google sheet so we can see who's actually been picked. How about that? He's already got it, but I'm going to send it to him again.
That's right. We have a Google Sheets for board bets. I like it. Got to document.
I'll tell you what. I think they still have a lot of work to do. But I'll go with FIU. I mean, there's still plenty of decent talent here. This is a program that finished 12-18 a couple of years ago in that league, 23-32 overall. Third team from the bottom in that league. There's enough talent on this roster to greatly improve that conference record. And I still get it. Like, they haven't taken a big step forward, but I mean, it's not like Mervil Melendez forgot to coach just, you know, last year. So I feel like these guys are due to take a step forward.
Yeah. I feel like I keep betting on FIU and I'm early. Like I've been yes. early a couple times. We probably have all been, but Mervil Melendez, we know, can coach to your point. So, oh man, this is real. I got three teams that are top of mind right now. And who do I pull the trigger on? You know what? Let's go off of the continent, I think, and give me the Hawaii Warriors. They were 8-16. No one picked Hawaii last time, right? We just talked about it.
You're correct. Yep, you're good.
Yeah. They've got a bunch of players back, old team. They just have never done it in the Big West. They just have had a really tough time getting over the hump in the Big West. And, I mean, 8-16 gives me a lot of room to play with there. I think they can get to 500 at least with as veteran a team as they have. So give me UH. Give me Hawaii.
Good pick. Good pick, Runes. That's a good one to finish up on. A lot of Hawaii talk here on the podcast today.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, subliminal talked me into it.
I'm excited about the Kapalua tournament coming up here. Start off the PGA Tour season.
Oh, you know? Look at you.
That going on?
Oh, yeah, that one.
Best segue of the pod, Fitzy. Look at you.
Well, that's going to do it, I think, for this week's podcast. It was a fun exercise. As always, we will keep tabs on these picks over the course of the season. And I think last time the stake was the winner has to buy the first round in Omaha on Thursday night. The winner of part two of the podcast will have to buy the first round of drinks on Friday night in Omaha. There'll be plenty of opportunities at the Hilton Bar this year.
Yeah, that's right.
But and we'll have a fan boat, and Runes will try not to grovel so much so that maybe he doesn't get buried.
Less groveling.
We'll be back again next week to conclude our stock game with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. So looking forward to that. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Happy New Year, boys. Well done. Yeah, what a looking forward to 2021. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go.
To say the least.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Driveline Baseball for sponsoring this podcast. We'll see you again next week. Until then, so long, everybody.